Lyndon Johnson is often seen as governing in the same tradition as Franklin Roosevelt. But Johnson came to office under very different circumstances and had a very different experience. Here to comment on the presidency of Lyndon Johnson is Bruce Schulman, professor of history at Boston University and the author of Lyndon B. Johnson and American Liberalism, published by St. Martin's Press.
Every president, Lyndon Johnson believed, has to establish the right to govern. Just being elected does not guarantee him that right. Inheriting the office in the wake of a shocking tragedy, the assassination of John F. Kennedy, made the challenge all the more difficult. "I took the oath," Johnson recalled. "I became president. But for millions of Americans, I was still illegitimate, a naked man with no presidential covering, a pretender to the throne, an illegal usurper. The whole thing was almost unbearable." But Johnson never flinched. He immediately took up the fallen Kennedy's mantle. "Let us continue," he reassured the American people in his first speech as president. Still, he made it clear that his would be no caretaker administration. When one advisor warned him against risking too much prestige to implement Kennedy's program, LBJ raised his eyebrows and replied, "Well then, what the hell's the presidency for?" In fact, the historical moment perfectly suited Johnson's talents. The shocked nation cried out for unity and healing, and Johnson had spent his career fashioning consensus, bringing bitter rivals to compromise through sheer force of will. Meanwhile, Kennedy's legislative program had stalled on Capitol Hill. His death placed LBJ, a savvy horse trader and superb legislative tactician, in the Oval Office. Johnson immediately placed his own distinctive earthy stamp on the White House. When using the toilet, showering, or getting a massage, at all of those intimate and possibly embarrassing settings, he expected staff members to follow him and continue working. In just a few months, Johnson spurred a stubborn Congress into action, declaring war on poverty and breaking the back of racial segregation in the South. He also earned the admiration of his fellow Americans, but he had not won their affection or their votes. With an election approaching in November 1964, LBJ determined to win the presidency in his own right. The Republican Party helped by nominating as his opponent Senator Barry Goldwater of Arizona, the leader of its extreme conservative wing. "In your heart, you know he's right," declared Goldwater's slogan. "Yeah, far right," most Americans answered, or as one critic put it, "In your guts, you know he's nuts." With his saber-rattling rhetoric and opposition to civil rights and Social Security, Goldwater frightened even many within his own party. LBJ won a monumental landslide. "Millions upon millions of people," he beamed, "each one marking my name on their ballot, each one wanting me as their president." No longer an accidental leader, Johnson had won the largest mandate ever, and he planned to use it to go beyond his predecessors, ushering in his own liberal reconstruction of America. Sadly, his fondest hopes would evaporate as the Vietnam War consumed his presidency and his country. LBJ's genius for consensus did not translate into foreign tongues. Peoples engaged in a long death struggle for self-rule would not cut deals or bow to the famous Johnson treatment. Half a world away, Lyndon Johnson's political genius, so potent at home, would be tested and found wanting.
You've been listening to Bruce Schulman, author of Lyndon B. Johnson and American Liberalism. This is Talking History.